Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. Fast-paced delivery that's sure to knock you for six with former England opening batsman. This is Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup Show on Love Sport.
Hey, good morning. It's a very good morning. Here on Love Sport Radio, another cracking day of World Cup cricket. Or should I say cracking day? It's raining again. I mean, God, it doesn't stop bloody raining in this country, hey? I mean, no reserve days. You know, there was a stat yesterday, Dave Richards saying that actually they proved that in England, because of the good drainage system, that they actually don't miss many games of cricket. But he said, had we known there was going to be three full days of a washout, perhaps they would have reconsidered this reserve day. So obviously, not going to plan at the moment, but looking relatively dry at Trent Bridge. India are playing New Zealand, so a huge game there. We see Sourav Ganguly and the huge swashbuckling New Zealand batsman Brendan McCullum just talking about the game ahead. It does look overcast, so hopefully we can bring you some more regarding that action. David Warner, we spoke about him a lot yesterday, talking a bit about the bad boys of cricket, but didn't he play well yesterday? Another 100 for him, his first 100 since coming back from the sort of ball tampering scandal. And another talking point is ICC are trying to censor commentators for criticising umpires. That comes after Michael Holding had a stab at the umpires regarding some of the poor decisions that were sort of displayed against his beloved, the West Indies. Lots of empty seats too. So a bit of conjecture around that. All that and more to come up on this show. But again, Guy Watts is with me. He's been a fantastic host. He was on fire yesterday, and I'm very glad to have him on today.
The rain's put me out, Nick. Don't worry. Slightly cooler temperatures predicted in the studio. So yeah, looking forward to getting stuck into all that stuff. I think I wrote David Warner off during yesterday's show, which was, of course, a fantastic piece of judgment from me, as always. But yeah, he must have been listening and thought, I'm going to show you no more of that nonsense, scoring 50s off 80 balls or any of the other stuff that we've seen from in the last few games. A runnable 100 on a little bit of a trickier pitch than we're used to seeing down at Taunton. And ultimately, I guess it kind of won his team the game. Not you know, to disregard the importance of the bowlers, who did do exceptionally well, Pat Cummins in particular, but David Warner really led the way.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of criticism has come as well. I say a lot of criticism, not a huge amount of criticism. I mean, there's talk about Michael Vaughan saying, you know, Australia playing like one day cricket like it was 25 years ago, old fashioned approach, etc. But in some ways, you know, you look at Warner, he's coming back into international cricket. There are a lot of boos around the ground. It'd be quite easy for him to go out there, play a few reckless shots, nick off for 5 or 10, be sitting in the hutch feeling bad about his game. Whereas actually, he's taken on the onus. And I think that's something that people must understand. It's a long tournament.
Yeah, you know? It's a long tournament.
You're not just going to hit ground running from game one. So actually, the time that he's spent in the middle in foreign conditions, you know, England, the pitches have been a bit spicy. They have been a bit different. You know, I think the way that he's gone about preparing and building up his runs and his kind of form is actually the right way to go.
Well, he's now got 350s in 4 games. 2 of those have been high scores, 89 not out against Afghanistan, a century yesterday as well. Yeah, I think you're right to say that actually as well, we also take for granted a little bit the fact that in England, in, you know, the English team, we've got batsmen who almost 1-7 when Moeen's playing well, have the ability to score 100 off maybe 60 or 50 balls even. And Australia don't have that. And that's fair enough because, you know, England are exceptional. We've been setting the trends, leading the way. And Australia are heavily reliant on Warner and Aaron Finch at the top of the order. If one of those guys doesn't fire, they're asking a lot of a middle order. And I think that what Michael Vaughan's getting at is yesterday when you had Usman Khawaja coming in at like number 6 with 12 overs to go, it didn't look quite right. You know, that is not the role that Khawaja should be playing. And I do just wonder with Khawaja, Marsh and Steve Smith, if they've got too much of a bit of an old-fashioned or a test match middle order, and if they're going to lose out a little bit further down the line in the tournament. But 3 wins from 4, it's not a bad start. They're looking a little bit ominous.
Yeah, you need your best players playing well. There's no doubt about it. You look at India, Shikhar Dhawan's injured now. They're just showing a replay of the ball hitting his finger. And it looks really nasty. I think he's got a little hairline fracture. They're saying 3 weeks, you know. So just talking about some of these big players, Dhawan and Warner, you know, these are the sort of big players that really do need to step up for their country. And, you know, I just think that the question begs itself. When these players don't step up, you know, the likes of India's middle order, the likes of Australia's middle order, how strong are they?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, David Warner, Shikhar Dhawan, with centuries at the top of the order for their teams in their last two games, their teams have gone on to win those games. So, yeah, I don't think it's coincidence that having, you know, your openers making big scores. Jason Roy for England against Bangladesh last weekend, that was absolutely vital in setting us up for a big and a vital win. So, yeah, I suppose it's good to see the batsmen maybe re-establishing themselves a little bit in this tournament. We were saying in the first week or so it's going to be a bowlers tournament, but I think it's important actually to acknowledge that yesterday, Mohammad Amir bowled one of probably the best 10 over spells overall, especially David Warner said that facing him in his second spell was one of the sort of toughest, you know, bits of bowling he's had to get through, you know, at any stage of his career. And he only conceded, I think, 4 runs off his first 2 overs overall in the game. So it's not like he was bowling badly to start with. 5 for 30 off 10 overs is an incredible return. And yeah, while it's not that great to see an opposition player doing brilliantly, you know, from your own team's perspective, it's great to see, you know, stars emerging at the World Cup. Mohammad Amir, maybe this is his time to really reassert himself on the world stage. He's not been great for Pakistan over the last year or so, but he's coming for
well,
the right time.
I mean, bad boys of cricket. You know, we brought it up yesterday. It's been a bit of a theme running through us. We love a bat. We love Sport Radio loves a bad boy of cricket. Hey, we've got David Warner. We've got Mohammad Amir, who did bowl beautifully. You know, there has been some... Well, I suppose a worry about his form is probably a way to go. He didn't really play in the first game, did he? He was kind of left out. He's come back in. And look, if conditions were going to be conducive for him, it was yesterday. You know, there was overcast conditions. The pitch did have a little bit in it, and he did bowl beautifully. And you know what? You know, we'd say it again. It's about the big players really performing. That's what lights up this World Cup. And I thought he did bowl beautifully. Talking about big players, though, looking ahead to this game, India versus New Zealand. I you know, a lot's been spoken about some of the big games and what have you. I think, of course, India go into this game as favourites. But it's going to be a tough contest because we know how well New Zealand perform in World Cups.
Yeah, they do. I look at it, though, as actually New Zealand, while they've had 3 wins from 3, that sort of... I haven't played the best opposition.
Well, they haven't.
They've played arguably the 3 weakest teams in the tournament, and you could debate whether or not that's exactly true, but they've certainly played 3 of the weakest teams. And while it's been good for them, for their confidence to get 3 wins under their belt, I think they might also be a little bit undercooked. Today is massive for both teams, of course, but for New Zealand to really test themselves as a bit of a barometer for where they're at, because we haven't been able to see how good New Zealand are yet, because they haven't had to be anywhere near their best. We had someone the other day say they haven't got out of second gear, and I think you said you weren't even sure they got that far. So I think they need to sort of put down a bit of a performance, because people are going to start saying, well, you've only beaten Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Bangladesh, and they're not bad teams, but they are the weaker ones in this tournament. And let's be honest, they only stumbled past Bangladesh at the Oval. That was a thriller, a really tight finish that, you know, was probably only 1 wicket away from going the other way. So yeah, it's a big chance for New Zealand to really assert themselves. But I have to say, India are looking a little bit ominous. You know, there's some questions coming from Indian fans for you already, Nick, which I'm sure you're pleased to hear. I know you've struck up a real rapport with the Indian fans over the last few days on social media.
Oh dear, let's not go there. I've had an absolute barrage. Rightly so. It's nice to see fans, and we know that the Indian cricket fans are very passionate. So we're going to carry on that conversation. Give me a bit of a breather over this break to get my thoughts together. Of course, more about broadcasters are asking commentators like Michael Holding not to give airtime to umpiring mistakes.
This is Love Sport.
Yes, it's Love Sport Radio. Nick Compton here on the World Cup Cricket Show. Just a few views of the Trent Bridge Cricket Ground. What an amazing ground that is, I really have to say. It's one of my favourite grounds. Fast scoring, fantastic pitch. And, well, it always brings up a few high scores, doesn't it? I think England have done particularly well there. But today at Trent Bridge, we've got the big game, India versus New Zealand.
And some disappointing news, it's a pitch inspection.
Oh, dear.
At 10:30. So it's not going to be starting on time. It's not to say that it's necessarily going to be a reduced game running yet. Of course, there is plenty of time, given it's a morning start. But, yeah, it's not going to start on time. Pitch inspection at 10:30. It's hard to tell. It's one of those, I think if you're a fan, you'd be saying, obviously, it's not great weather. You're not out there in your T-shirt and your sunnies. But you'd be thinking, it's not pouring with rain here. Do we really need to be delaying the start? I can see actually the ground is very much far from full. But
got to think about the bowlers, though. There'll be a lot of moody bowlers.
Never thought
there,
I'd
having
hear you
a look
that.
At the foot, they go, oh, I don't want to bowl on this. You know, it's going to be a bit, you know, slippery here and there. But I mean, look, in terms of the contest, Kohli versus Kane Williamson, we talk about some of the big players in this tournament. You know, Kane Williamson's been quite a sort of silent assassin over the last few years, hasn't he? Such a fantastic player. He's a real technician. But, you know, and Kohli, on the other hand, is a little bit more brash, a little bit more in your face, but both world-class players.
Joe Root or Kane Williamson, if you could only choose one.
Look, I'm a from a one-day perspective, I think Joe Root's a brilliant, brilliant player. He's in my top three. It's really hard to call. I'm going to go Joe Root. I'm a big Joe Root fan. But
it's a tough call.
It is a tough call. Look, I think all around Kane Williamson, you know, because he plays in the IPL and has had quite a successful stint in the IPL, I think he probably, all round, probably is the slightly better cricketer at the moment. But I think there's no doubt that between the three of them isn't a huge amount to pick up.
Do you think Joe Root's a little bit underappreciated? Not maybe as a one-day player. And I know he did play out in the Big Bash and he had actually a pretty poor time of it. But he's never really played in the IPL, never done anything big there. And I know that he is desperate to do a bit more franchise cricket. You know, we've seen him play great 2020 innings for England, not least in the World T20 final a couple of years ago. Has he got a lot more to offer in that form of the game?
He has. And I mean, one guy that I know has a really fantastic view on this is Mark Butcher, who's on the line. Butch, great to have you on this morning.
Oh, morning. How are you, gents?
Yeah, very good, mate. Obviously, a big clash today. India versus New Zealand. Kane Williamson, Kohli. We're talking about Joe Root, mate. Where do you sort of rank those guys? Do you think they're pretty similar?
I think Virat Kohli is sort of the undisputed king of the 50-over format.
Sure.
I'd also throw Ross Taylor in there, given his form over the last 18 months. Kane Williamson and Joe Root are brilliant batsmen in all formats of the game. I think if you're talking strictly 50-over cricket, then Kohli is probably the number one. But I was listening into your conversation with interest there about Joe and sort of the underappreciation of him. Not by people who understand the game, purely, because he's sort of just a fabulous player. His 200s in the series against England at home, India at home last year, won England the series. He's made a brilliant century, albeit in a losing cause against Pakistan. And what we've seen in this World Cup, because the standard of bowling has been so high, and the sort of the pressure of the points being on the board as opposed to being a bilateral series, it hasn't all been about scoring 400 and smashing it out of the park.
Yeah.
As I predicted it would be. You know, you end up with the best bowlers in the world knocking around and suddenly the game doesn't look quite so easy.
Yeah.
So you need your, your expert players of all different types of innings.
Absolutely.
In the order.
Yeah, well said. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I guess in today's modern game, because England's sort of style has been so crash, bang and wallop, you know, people like Joe Root almost start falling under the radar a little bit. And you almost think, what's he doing wrong? Why is he not smashing it? But you forget that... You know, you do need players like that, don't you? Especially been spicy.
You know, his great strength, as far as I can see, apart from the fact that, you know, he's a very good player of all types of bowling and very adaptable to all types of surfaces, is that no matter what's going on around him, i.e., great spells or an unreadable mystery spinner, Joe Root still is able to play at just around about a run a ball in those circumstances. He'll never get up to sort of the 120, 140, 150 strike rates of somebody like Josh Butler, but very rarely does he waste any deliveries in a 50-over inning. So if he bats for any length of time, you're not getting behind a run a ball with him in. And that for me is a huge, huge strength, because it allows it takes a lot of pressure off the other guys who maybe take up more dot balls but hit more boundaries.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, is it as clear-cut as bowlers sort of winning this World Cup? Do you believe that sort of the likes of India, et cetera, are going to be right up there? And I mean, I suppose looking ahead at this game, India versus New Zealand, it is a big game. New Zealand might not be quite the same team that they have been in previous World Cups, but they still look pretty strong.
Oh, no, they're a really strong side. I think, you know, their bowling lineup is not to be underestimated.
Okay.
Matt Henry and Lachie Ferguson, we've talked about England's pace, you know, the options they have for pace in Archer and Wood, and that being a massive bonus for us. Well, you know, New Zealand have got two guys above 90 miles an hour in their side too, in Henry and Lachie Ferguson. So they're a terrific bowling attack. Listen, mate, my opinion on cricket hasn't changed a great deal in the last 20 years, and that is that no matter scoring rates, everything else, your bowlers are still the most important people by miles. Because a wicket is, you know, is so much more valuable than a run, you know, or 10 runs or whatever you might be. So the, you know, yes, economy rates have gone through the sky as people have become much better at hitting boundaries, hitting sixes. But guys who can pick up 2-3 wickets in an over and suddenly change the game on his head are worth their weight in gold. And so therefore, you know, if you look around and think that a lot of the batting lineups have got destructive players, and that's going to be a constant through the better teams, then the thing that's going to separate them is going to be their wicket taking capability, and therefore India, New Zealand, Australia, England to a certain extent are all going to be, you know, as much as they're in the top four at the moment, they're going to be there at the end because they are able to bowl people out. I mean, Pakistan on their day will be able to do a similar thing. The West Indies have proven, sort of going back to basic West Indian principles of trying to hit people on the head, have proven that they can do it too. So, you know, it's the bowlers are king, always were, always have been.
Butch, I want to get your thoughts on Australia. I think it's already pretty clear that Pat Cummins and Mitchell Stark, sort of as you're basically saying about the bowlers being so important, are probably their two most valuable players. But looking at their batting order quickly, I look at their top order and I think, you know, in their top three, they've probably got as good as any in the tournament. But do you look at their middle order and think, actually, if you can knock a couple of the top order over early, you're actually into a middle order that's not going to scare too many bowling attacks. And could that be where they maybe come undone a little bit at this World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, and they seem to be a tiny bit confused about the best way to use somebody like
Khawaja. Yeah, he came in at six yesterday.
Khawaja, yes, and Max
Maxwell.
Why can't I think of his bloody name?
Glenn Maxwell.
Yeah, Maxwell, Glenn Maxwell, exactly. You know, whereas most of the other big side, India aside, because they play it very much in the old way of sort of building the innings and then sort of accelerating towards the end. But Australia seems to have been suspicious of the talents of Glenn Maxwell and how to use him and when to get him in the order.
Is that because he's inconsistent?
Well, I mean, possibly that, but also because they've never given him a role, they've never given him the sort of the confidence of saying, here, mate, right, we're gonna base this batting lineup around you. He's never quite sure as to when the trapdoor is going to open up underneath him, when he's going to find himself out of the side. So as a consequence, he finds it difficult to kind of express himself in the way that England's players have done, because they've been told that's what we want you to do. That's why you're in the team. So it's an interesting one for Australia. I mean, but the thing is, you know, they won four out of the last five World Cups. They'll kind of they'll figure it out, you imagine, won't you? Because as the tournament goes on, whilst winning games without playing particularly well, you know, that's been a strength of theirs in tournament play.
Coming on to England, lastly on to England, Butch, we know how good this team is, coming in as favourites, etc. Are there any concerns regarding the bowling attack? I mean, I know this Archer's come onto the scene. Are we expecting too much from him?
I think the interesting thing was when England decided to leave out Liam Plunkett in the game against Pakistan because they wanted extra pace in the side. I understood, but I also thought that the role that Liam Plunkett plays in the team, i.e. the guy that takes wickets through the middle, and another bloke who could potentially... I mean, imagine if Liam Plunkett had been coming in at eight or nine against Pakistan in that run chase, then England's chances of winning it would have gone up quite dramatically, wouldn't they? But he wasn't in the side. And, of course, now with Moeen Ali, I don't know if he was left out the last game for tactical reasons or because of the birth of his child or whatever. You know, England's policy and England's team has basically been that they play two spinners pretty much no matter what in the side. And, I have no issue with that, except for the fact that all of a sudden pace has been sort of key in this tournament up till now. And with this terrible weather knocking around, that might stay the case.
So England need to adapt effectively.
They do, yeah. They need to be, and the thing is, they've got enough tools in the bag to be able to kind of do whatever the conditions say they should do. So, you know, if they end up playing all the quicks and Plunkett stays in the side and they only go with one spinner, I don't think that's going to be particularly an issue. You know, the only thing that they do have to worry about is not getting Owen Morgan banned by bowling their overs in 4 hours or whatever it is that they've been doing. That's something that you need to worry about if you're only going to play the one specialist spin bowl.
Okay, Butch. Thanks, mate. I mean, a great insight from you. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
And
we look forward to watching England in their next match. But when we come back, we'll be reviewing the Australia-Pakistan game yesterday.
Love Sport.
Yes, welcome back to Love Sport Radio. We've just got a quote in from Fraser Masefield. He says, how much of an outcry will there be if Warner and Smith star in an Australian win in the final? Oh dear, can you imagine the boos then, huh?
I don't want any more questions from Fraser.
We don't.
No, no, I don't like that question. No, it would be unbearable, wouldn't it? But I guess what could work really, really well for the sort of narrative of the whole summer, imagine if Australia, I don't know, knocked England out in the semi-final or even beat us in the final or won the World Cup or whatever. It would be horrible. It would be awful to watch. But imagine then the sort of the stakes and the tension, the excitement ahead of the Ashes. And I don't know, there's a lot of England fans out there who would probably take the Ashes over the World Cup. Still, it's one that's too tough to choose. But let's hope we don't have to.
Well, David Warner said he changed his approach against Pakistan.
Against India, I hit a lot of fielders. And you as a player, you feel like you've got no rhythm. And that's what happened. But today was one of those wickets where, you know, if you're still looking to score and your defence is tight, you'll create those opportunities for yourself. And that's what we focus on as a batter. You know, you've got to try and really adapt to those conditions.
Well, I mean, you know, he's kind of hit the nail on the head there, really. I mean, Mark Butcher just talking before the break about, you know, the fact that these pitches haven't been 400 plus. They've required adaptation. We've seen a lot of quality bowlers. And I guess it kind of puts into question the fact that, you know, there is a rise in standard. You know, some of the international cricket we watch are played on, well, have been played on flatter wickets. Okay, there hasn't been the sort of inclement weather that's made these wickets perhaps a little bit spicier. But actually, you are seeing some of the best bowlers in the world. And again, we always come back to it. You know, great bowlers win cricket matches.
Yeah, but I think if I were an Australia player or fan, I'd have looked at 307 all out yesterday and actually been really disappointed.
I know that was
only because Warner and Finch laid such a good platform. Those conditions were not easy to start with yesterday, but they were going along at a run a ball and occasionally at better than that.
They should have got a much bigger score.
In terms of scores,
I mean, Taunton, as much as there might be a green tinge on it, it always gives away more than it actually is. It's a flat wicket. It's a great wicket. There was a bit of swing, but you should be getting a lot more than that at Taunton.
And the boundaries are small, and they were 146 for none, I think they were, off 22 overs, something like that. You know, about six and over, more than that maybe. And then they only added another 160 odd runs in the last 20 plus overs, and that was nowhere near good enough for the platform that they had. So yes, it's not been the run fest that we thought it might have been, you know, and there wasn't the 400 plus score that we might have expected at Taunton. But I don't actually think that was just because of the conditions or the bowling. I think Australia had a score of near 400 at the very least there for the taking, and I think that they should be asking questions of their batsmen and asking why more of them other than Warner and Finch didn't actually seem to apply themselves in the right way. You know, I know Glenn Maxwell was sent in to tonk it around, but you can't blame him. But the likes of Smith, Finch and Khawaja, they didn't seem to get their iron properly before playing the big shots.
Well, I mean, just, you know, we talk about having a settled batting lineup, and you look at England's team, it's very settled. I mean, players know their roles. You know, Butler comes in, he does his thing. You know, Stokes comes in, he does his thing. I mean, you look at the Australian team, apart from Warner and Finch and Smith, who's obviously a world-class player, you don't get the feeling that a Marsh is walking out there going, I'm Australia's number five and I've been doing this for years. I'm coming in at number five, and will I play the next game? And, you know, is five my best spot or should I be at number three? And you know, Khawaja is probably thinking the same thing. And I think when you've got that uncertainty, particularly as you get sort of more into the competition, and I think it's shown over the last few years. I mean, I know this is kind of a slightly rebuilding Australian team. There's no doubt there's a kind of rebuilding nature to the Australian team. And they, you know, they're not losing games. They're winning games. They're playing good cricket. But I do feel it is an area that they need to rectify and rectify quickly.
Massively. Well, you say those three batsmen, those top three as they were yesterday, but I think even Steve Smith doesn't know necessarily where he's batting before each game. He's batted at three in the last two, but he's normally sort of penciled down to come in at number four. And look, it's not a massive difference. Even England will occasionally switch things around, but my point is I'm agreeing to say that they don't know what their roles are, and I think that even if they do know what their roles are, they're not quite the right roles for ODI cricket in 2019. You know, I don't know if Michael Vaughan's quite right saying they're 25 years out of date, but I think they might be 5 or 10 years out of date. And I personally think that it's Australia's sort of inner mindset, it's their know-how when it comes to big, you know, international cricket World Cup games that's getting them through. I think that between Warner, Finch, Smith, Cummins and Stark, they're papering over cracks massively. I think those five players, world class. I think the other six in that team have got a long way to go to prove that they're capable of featuring the sharp end of this.
Yeah, but it is about management. There's no doubt that Marsh and Khawaja are good enough players to get 50s, 60s, 80s in world cricket. They've done it before. So I think it's about how they managed. I think that's the important thing at this level. You know what I mean? All these guys can play. I mean,
yeah, I'm not questioning that they can play. I just think that, you know, having seen them play, we've seen four games now. We haven't seen a big score from anyone that's not called Smith or Warner, really. And I think that actually, you know, they're halfway through the group stage and they're yet to really fire on all cylinders. You could say that means that there's an exciting potential still there, Or if you're being a little bit more critical, you could say that if a couple of those big guns don't fire on a given day, then they could be left a little bit short-handed, because both those games that they've had now against Pakistan and the West Indies, yes, they produced in the big moments bowling second, but actually it could have quite easily gone the other way, and you know, next time the luck may not be with them. And yeah, it's difficult because you don't want to see Australia do well, really, but you're kind of hopeful a little bit that maybe a bad result is
I think it's good that Australia do well. Come on, I mean, they have been through a tough time. You know, they made some mistakes, but I think they're making a real effort to come back. And I actually feel that a World Cup isn't the same without a strong Australia. And I quite like the fact they're doing. I don't want them to do too well, but I think it's nice that they are coming back. It does add a huge amount. There's a lot of support from Australia. It's a huge sporting nation. And you want your best teams playing well. I think the big question yesterday for me, though, I mean, take away the Australia. I mean, Pakistan should really have chased that down. They were in a good position. They were playing well. And I think they threw that away.
I think they went from 120-odd for two to 160 for six. And, you know, especially I looked at the middle order when it came up on the screens before the game, the number of caps that everyone in that team had. In Sarfraz, and especially Shoaib Malik and Mohammad Hafeez, there can barely be many more experienced players in the tournament, especially than Hafeez and Malik. And for those guys to give their wickets away so cheaply, I know Sarfraz was there till the end, but for Malik and Hafeez, you know, if they're there for anything, it's to be those calm heads in a run chase. It's to sort of judge a game situation, play the right shots at the right time. You'd have thought, if anything, they'd be guilty of going too slowly, but they've actually, you know, batted quite quickly from what we've seen so far. So I think they need to take more responsibility. If one of those guys had stuck around for another 10 overs even, what with Wahab Riaz and Hassan Ali tonking it around a bit at the end, that could easily have gone the other way. And I think Pakistan will be kicking themselves. They've already got England scalp, and they could quite easily have had Australia's yesterday as well if they'd just focused a little bit more and judged that run chase better.
Yeah, but you know, again, we come back to the bowling. I mean, it was Australia's bowling that clawed that back. And
Pat Cummins 3 for 32 off 10 overs.
I mean, Shoaib Malik got him out early, didn't they? And that was dangerous, because he's the type of guy who can get you a 50 or 60 balls and just hold things together. But look, so much cricket coming on. The covers are back on at Trent Bridge. 30 to 50% chance of rain in Nottingham all day. Not again. This could be a frustrating wait for the teams and fans, and it is hugely disappointing. So it might be a case of watching highlights of other cricket matches if you are a cricket fan. But we're going to come back. We've got a good friend and international cricket trainer. Yes, Simon Schmidt on the line when we get back.
This is Love Sport.
Yes, it's Love Sport Radio, and what do you believe? It's raining again. No cricket for the third day in a row. This is depressing, guy, isn't it?
It is, mate. It is. I haven't even got the heart to play a bit of Crowded House and their lovely weather jingle, because it's going to be depressing news if we go too into the forecast. It's not looking great in Nottingham. Rain forecast really for much of the day, at least a 50% chance really for most of the time between now and about 7 o'clock this evening. So let's hope we can sneak a game in. It might be a reduced overs aside one.
Well, you know what that means, hey? When it's raining at cricket grounds, what a player do, they often hit the gym. And I'm glad to say some of us do. We eat some chocolate biscuits, you know, talk some rubbish and have a cup of tea, you know what I mean? One of the two.
Sounds more likely.
But the modern day game, that's what it's about. And I'm delighted to say I've got Simon Schmidt, really good friend of mine from Cape Town, who's trained a lot of these top players, the likes of Dale Steyn and Jacques Callis and Graham Smith, and knows all about what it takes to prepare these athletes for a big tournament. Good morning, mate.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Great to have you on. I guess we're just talking a little bit about the rain. Got a lot of listeners asking, you know, what happens during rain breaks and, you know, about the weather and stuff like that. I suppose that comes down to the larger question of the importance of players preparing for a tournament like this. I mean, is it quite an individual thing, or is it something that teams will get together to really prepare their players sort of physically for this tournament?
Nick, I think the thing is that, the modern game of cricket these days is it's an individual sport and it's a team sport. So the guys need to, obviously they prepare as a team on certain, you know, fielding drills and strategies around how they're going to implement what they're going to implement for the day. But as an individual, they are all having their own bespoke programs to make their weaknesses strengths. Because, you know, individually they need to perform to keep their place in the team. So,
and how do you train that, Simon? How do you train someone like a Graham Smith, who a bit of a larger sort of character, to a Dale Steyn, wirier, bowls fast? I mean, is that something as a trainer you've got to work out yourself?
I think it's important for anyone looking after a team, or, you know, data and planning is paramount to bespoking a plan for a cricketer. So So, you know, as much data as you can get and what their goals are and also where they're at in their career. I mean, how they're bowling. I mean, look, someone like Dale Steyn, you know, I think he's, you know, he might have been overtrading. You know, this he's constantly getting injured. He's, you know, he,
yeah.
he's not, there's something wrong with the management of that player. So, you know, for the likes of someone like Graham Smith, who needed to lose a lot of weight, that was his focus. And you build a plan around you know, getting him fit and ready, specific to what he needs, you know.
Okay, and in terms of the work that you do, I mean, obviously there's always been questions about cricket. People say, oh, cricket players, you know, they don't, there's not much fitness involved, is there? But I mean, you know, there is a lot of fitness involved now. There's a lot of three different forms of the game. And what sort of style of training do you really try and focus on with cricketers in particular?
I think mobility and functional mobility, you know, strengthening through lengthening is key these days, you know, because of these different kinds of formats of cricket, you know, the kind of, you know, old school, you know, push and pull kind of exercises. You know, cricketers are not rugby players.
Yeah.
Yes, they need to be explosive, but they need to be explosive through movement. So, you know, functional movement for cricketers is very important.
Like what? Well, give me an example.
Multi-joint exercises, you know, for the likes of something like a Turkish get-up, you know, just constantly training through movement with load, if that makes any sense to you know. So the problem as well that cricketers face is they're on their feet a huge amount and then they're off their feet. So it's about managing that person through, you know, constantly, because
travel,
you know,
travel
and, you know, traveling is a huge factor, you know, and if cricketers, any sportsmen, even individuals as per se, are not sleeping well, you just don't recover. It's as simple as that. So it's, you know, people think it's easy and they rock up and they just, you know, bat and bowl and field. The pressures are huge, and the conditioning and the focus of these trainers looking after these teams is really intense.
Simon, I want to just have a little look at bowlers more specifically. You know, we've talked so much on this show about South Africa and how they came into this tournament with a bowling attack that on paper looked great, but in reality, none of Steyn, Rabada or Ngidi were realistically 100% fit. That was obviously a bit of bad luck, and they'd been playing in the IPL as well.
Yeah.
There are questions, debates about whether or not they should have been allowed to. But on a more general level, as someone who works with these guys, past and present, do you worry that bowlers are being asked to sort of to bear two big workloads? You know, is the strain they're putting their body through a little bit dangerous at times with the amount they're playing?
You know, I don't think the workload's an issue. I think the foundation phase of all these guys is the issue. The foundation blocks are not built correctly. So their base training is not done and not managed with the right detail.
But hard to do that now with all the tournaments, right? So, I mean, you know, now we're looking at all these sportsmen. They're going from one tournament to the next, IPL. So players almost need to have even more of a focus on a real management team that can help them keep that base up, right?
Absolutely. And the problem is that, you know, so the guys are going into from tournament to tournament to test series already on the back foot, you know, and they're carrying a certain injury and they're carrying, you know, then they underperform and then they get into a mental little wobble about how they're performing and they're carrying injuries. And so it's very, very difficult. That's why, you know, young cricketers and guys that are aspiring to play at a higher level, they have a beautiful opportunity to get the foundation phase correct. So that foundation will, you know, will stay with them for their whole career. And the reality of things are, guys, is players are playing through injuries, especially bowlers. Mm. And they're not managed correctly. You know, they're assets to a country or a team, and they need to be, these assets need to work and they need to perform. That's why they're employed.
From an England perspective, Simon, we're talking a lot, you know, it seems every game we're talking about changing the bowling attack round. There's a lot of people going, do we know our best 11? You know, what makeup should we go with for this pitch and for this opposition and stuff? But actually, is there something to be said for, given how long a tournament it is, given how long a summer it is, in England's case in particular, actually just changing things around a little bit, almost for the sake of it, to keep people a little bit fresher, to give them a rest? Or actually, from a pure sporting perspective, would you say that it's more important to just keep them going if they're playing well, let them keep their momentum going, don't let someone else have a chance to take their place? What would you lean towards?
Absolutely. I think momentum and consistency is key for any kind of cricketer or sports person in general. And I think the problem is it comes with, and I am generalizing here, is the problem in management, is that they don't rely on outside influence. They keep it quite close to their chest. And, you know, in today's day and age, you've got very skilled professionals, health professionals, and guys with huge experience and can offer huge value to teams. And those guys are not being pulled in enough. Players need consistency. Players need to build confidence, but they also need to have the right foundation for
that. And that comes from, this is where we're getting to the point now, that obviously teams have S&C trainers, which is a bit of a one-size-fits-all, and that's always been a constant problem. Whereas, you've worked with a lot of these guys, you know, the Staines and the Graham Smiths, etc., outside of the team environment. But, you know, it's becoming much more of an individual sort of game now, isn't it?
It is. Just with the South African guys and the Cobras, they were very, very pro working with other people, which was great. So, you know, the likes of Mike Horn has worked with SA Cricket and, it's changing. The mindset's changing.
Yeah.
But guys need to be constantly managed. And I think the problem, because cricket is such an intense focus for a short period of time, like a test match or a tournament, what happens after those tournaments? And that's where the guys fall apart.
Okay.
The socializing goes up, the conditioning goes down, the injuries stay the same, and it's just in this kind of spiral.
Right.
So, conditioning is such a detailed and difficult thing to manage with cricketers in the current workload for people that they have.
Oh, absolutely, mate. Simon, fascinating insight, mate. Let's hope that England's team are well conditioned going into their next game, because it's a massive one against the West Indies, of course, if it stays dry in Southampton tomorrow.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to Love Sport Radio. It's Nick Compton here and Guy Watts. We're talking about cricket. Of course, we're not talking about cricket that's being played, because it's raining again for the third day in a row, but there aren't any reserves days. We chatted to Dave Richardson yesterday, who made a few comments about the fact that they didn't expect to have 3 days of rain, but we live in England.
Oh, Dave, come on. You must have played enough cricket here, been here enough on your holidays to know that you needed a couple of reserve days. But no, with so many games in this tournament, I do understand how logistically it would have been a complete nightmare. It would have been massively expensive. It also would have been a pain for fans. You know, if you want to take the day off work, can I have tomorrow off instead? It's not that easy. And, you know, obviously if we go on to have a load more, it will be a nightmare. But let's hope that this bad spell will be going away quickly.
Well, let's hope that in terms of bad spells, we don't want to see any bad spells from England, because we need our fast bowlers bowling mean and quick, just like the West Indies used to do back in the 1980s. We've got some audio from Trevor Bayliss just talking about Jofra Archer, who was born in Barbados, his big game against the West Indies.
He's looking forward to it. You know, he obviously knows a few guys in their team. I think it'll be like anyone that knows any other players in the team. It's always bragging rights.
I suppose they've got to write about something, haven't they? I mean, you know, Jofra Archer, born in the West Indies, chose to play for England. It's obviously a big occasion for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big occasion. I just love the guy. I mean, I can't imagine... He never seems anything more than like so laid back. He's horizontal, as that sort of cliched saying goes, and you can't really imagine him like in the changing room being like, oh, I'm ready to go, like getting really like fired up, because he just doesn't seem to have that level. I know he had that little fine for giving a bit of chat to the umpire for bowling a wide against, I think it was Pakistan, wasn't it? But you know, generally speaking, he's such a languid guy, and I'm sure he'll want to be taking loads of wickets and getting up the West Indies batsmen tomorrow, but he's like that against whoever he plays. I don't think he's going to be, you know, giving out a load of verbals and getting in their face or anything like that. That's not his style. He literally lets his bowling do the talking. When you can bowl 95 miles an hour or 15 yards, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess you're right. I think we're looking at some of the other bowlers, the likes of Wokes, you know, we're kind of worried about him a little bit.
I am a bit, because Wokes' role in the team, let's be quite clear about this, is to take wickets in those first 10 overs. You'd be very surprised for Chris Wokes not to bowl a 5-overspell at least at the top of the innings, you know, to bowl 5 of his overs with that new ball, get wickets in the first 10 overs. He's got more wickets in that first power play for England than, well, way more than any other bowler in the last couple of years, but he's not been doing it. He's come back at the end and taken a couple, but that's not his role. We've got other people for that, and he's been quite expensive as well. I think he's vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, it always begs a question. I mean, Chris Wokes isn't somebody you regard as a quick bowler, and I think if he tries to bowl quick, I feel that's when he loses the magic that he provides. You know, for me, Chris Wokes, having played against him for years, played in with him, fantastic guy, great team man, you know, very an all-rounder. I mean, he's absolutely no doubt he's an all-rounder. He can bat, and I can tell you that right now. He's a big player for England. I just feel, having played against him, that when he steps down a gear or two and runs it and hits his areas, he's very skillful.
Well, that's the thing. He's more about the line of length than the pace.
I just watching him, it's almost like he's running and I feel like there's this exertion. I almost feel like Chris Wake's trying to exert himself too much to try and live up to the fact that this tournament's been about quick bowling and, you know, you've got, you know, everyone's bowling quick and it's easy for him. And I know they did ask this of him almost 7 or 8 years ago that, oh, Chris Wokes, to be an England bowler, he needs to bowl a yard quicker. He tried to go down that route. He got injured. He didn't bowl the same way. I think he has obviously come into his own a little bit more, but I just feel that when you watch him up the top, he's got to be metronome. He's got to be on that spot. We've got Jofra Archer and Chris Wood to come in and blow people away, if you want to call it that. But Wokes needs to be miserly. He needs to bowl top of off stump, every ball, make batsmen play poor shots.
All right, so he hasn't done that so far. So does he play tomorrow?
I think he does play. I would play him. I'd give him another chance. It's a long World Cup and we need our best bowlers playing well. And for me, if we can get him playing well and get him in form, you don't want to just chop and change just because he's had a few bad games.
All right, but we're pretty certain that someone's missing out because Moeen Ali's coming back, right? He missed the last game. It was at Cardiff. We didn't go for two
spinners. Is he coming back?
Well, that's what the papers are saying today. You know, that. Let's say for a fact that he is, just so that we have this debate, who does miss out? Because you say don't chop and change for Chris Wokes, but someone's going to miss out. So is that Mark Wood, who's bowled the quickest ball of the tournament, has looked really hungry? Is it Liam Plunkett, who I hope we've learned the lesson from leaving out against Pakistan and losing that game, is probably now in the side? It's not going to be Jofra Archer, is it? So who do you leave out?
What about Adil Rashid?
Well, I thought he bowled quite well against Bangladesh, and I thought that, you know, having kept him in after a poor performance in the game against Pakistan, to drop him now would be a strange call.
Yeah, but sorry to cut you there, but I think that England have gone in with this two-spinner approach, and it's worked very well for them over the years, but conditions are different now. Spinners aren't taking wickets in this competition. You know, it's the fast bowling that's coming. You know, do you have to adapt?
So should we leave Moeen out, do you think?
Well, potentially, yeah. I mean, the only reason why they'd probably bring Moeen back in is because of where they're playing. They're playing at the Rose Bowl, which traditionally has quite big boundaries, you know, and then it sort of brings spin back into it. And the Rose Bowl is conducive, but not in these conditions.
The thing is, as well, with England, the luxury we have is Ben Stokes, and he didn't come on until about the 35th, maybe after, over in the Bangladesh game, and he came on and bowled like a guy who was not happy about that. He took, I think, 3 wickets, and he bowled really, really well, and to have him as your 6th bowler, it's just another reason why England is such a strong team.
Too many options. I mean, you know, sometimes having too many options is tough, and who would want to be a, you know, Trevor Bayliss, Noel Morgan, trying to decide who to play? I mean, Moeen Ali was man of the series versus West Indies in 2017, last time they were in English conditions. I mean, 2017, it's 2019. I mean, I don't think you take much note of that other than you know, a player's form. But I guess it does come down to the sort of management of players. You know, we need to talk about that because, you know, again, it's a long tournament. Players are going to get injured. Niggles are going to happen. And I think as long as the management is secure and as long as the communication is right, then players coming in and out have got to get used to that, you know. But at the same time, you want to get the consistency.
I think, you know, with the Ben Stokes thing in mind, I would be picking Moeen because, you know, you've got those pace options. So you're leaving someone out that's a little bit harsh. Mark Wood, I think, has looked a new man, really. Ever since that third test against the West Indies back in March or whenever it was, he's talked openly about that. He says he's quoted the batsman he got out with the short ball. I think we leave him out tomorrow at our peril. But then again, I don't leave Liam Plunkett or Jofra Archer out. I personally would make a really tough call and say, Chris Wokes, you've not actually bowled well enough. It is looking increasingly like a tournament for the quicker bowlers. You know, it's a combination of the quicker and the much slower bowlers. And you've not really done the job. You've not done the business. Give Wood and Archer the new ball. Get right up the West Indian batsmen. See how they like the sort of stuff that their bowlers have been dishing out to the other teams. And I think that Chris Gayle, as brilliant as he still can be at 39, I don't think he's going to enjoy 95 miles an hour right from the off. And I'd quite like to see him go with the Wooden Archer tomorrow, but I'm not sure we will. I think if someone misses out, it probably will be Mark Wood. I think that might be a
well, it's box office. I tell you that now. It's box office. You know, Chris Gayle trying to lampoon the England lampoon. I don't know where that word came
from. Do you think, by the way, that Jofra Archer is kind of going to have Chris Gayle's number a little bit? I saw a quote from Mark Wood the other day, probably doing himself down a little bit, that he was asked, how do you stop Chris Gayle? And he said, well, let's see how Jofra Archer does against him. And
we're taking the pressure off himself, isn't he?
Yeah,
just like, hey, mate, over to you at the other end, you know?
True. But Jofra bowls really nicely to the left-handers, doesn't he? Is that gonna help England out a lot tomorrow? There's a couple of other left-handers in that West Indies top order as well.
And also we know, I mean, we remember Marlon Samuel saluting Stokes and Braithwaite's winning runs in the T20. I mean, there's no doubt that West Indies have beat beaten England before. Cottrell's celebration. We do love these West Indies. I guess they could have the ability to get under the skin.
They could, yeah, and there's definitely a little bit of history, recent history. Don't forget, we drew that ODI series in the West Indies earlier this year. That's the only bilateral series of more than one game that we haven't won against any nation in the last couple of years. So these guys are a good side, but on the other hand, for the West Indies, forget who they're playing. They need to win this game because actually they've had a couple of defeats now and they're probably one more away, certainly two more away from being, you know, out of the consideration when it comes to the semi-finals. And they're by no means favourites to get there, but their early showing suggested that they might be the dark horses, and we'd love them to be the dark horses, but we don't want them to be the dark horses because they've beaten England. So it's going to be a tricky one for the neutral tomorrow, but I'm confident that England are going to have enough. And speaking of the West Indies, we haven't talked that much about a former West Indies player, Michael Holding, who is obviously much better known to us these days as a commentator. He's been commentating for the ICC, and this story I do think is quite interesting. I think it's quite revealing about the ICC, the way they operate. They basically sent an email round from the Sunset and Vine production staff, who were doing the official ICC coverage, to the production staff and Michael Holding, who called the umpiring in the game against Australia atrocious. And I think he was right. I think he could have been harsher, to be completely honest. It was terrible. And he's basically been told that they don't want any controversy. They don't want any negative, you know, coverage or feedback about the World Cup if possible. And I don't like this. I think, you know, these attempts at censorship, don't employ Michael Holding if you don't want Michael Holding's views. Yeah. Just get any old person who can sit there and say this has happened or that.
Well, he's gone one step further. This just reminds me why I haven't been working on ICC tournaments recently, and I've been loathe to work in India on cricket owned by the BCCI as well. I mean, look, it's a passionate West Indies fan, ex-player, and of course commentator, and you know, I have to agree with some of his comments there. I mean, some of the umpiring scenes were woeful.
They were, and actually it's not just that game. Do you remember the one the other day? It was South Africa against was it India, their one where it was rained off, and Quinton de Kock was given out to a ball, I think it was from Jasprit Bumrah, a great catch taken behind the stumps, but it was so far away from the bat. Quinton de Kock, you could see the bewilderment on his face. He was like, mate, like, are you actually making me review this? And it's come off his arm, which was like a foot outside the line of his bat. And you're just thinking, are these umpires watching? You know, are they paying attention? Because some of these decisions wouldn't be acceptable on a Sunday League Village Green. And here we are getting them at a World Cup. And I'd like to think that Michael Holding would have been harsh, whoever it was that was the victim of these. It happens to be the West Indies. And I do not like that they're being told, commentators and production staff, to not focus on it. That's what analysts are there for, to talk about all aspects of the game.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of that. Also empty seats, lots of swathes of white seats visible for India versus South Africa at Southampton. Mainly sponsors' faults, people not taking tickets. It doesn't look good for the World Cup, does it?
It doesn't. It's a shame because the non-England games are actually priced pretty reasonably. And, you know, these grounds would be full because they're only at places where the people nearby love their cricket. And there's no reason that every seat shouldn't be sold. So I would say, sponsors, if you're not going to sell your tickets, give them back, because you're just wasting opportunities for people.
Well, look, there have been a lot of bad decisions for many years. The Ashes in 05 had some shocking decisions. But the thing is, I mean, look, you know, with DRS, you know, umpires are under a lot of pressure now. I can imagine they sort of stand there thinking, oh dear, and they're getting rated, and you know, it's kind of, this DRS is, I suppose, it's trying to get rid of the shocker, but there still are a few shockers, you know.
Still a few shockers. And Michael Holding makes the point, if this was a World Cup, a football World Cup rather, these umpires, these referees would have been sent home. And why should cricket be different? There's a lot of money in the game now, a lot of scrutiny, and rightly so. We want the batsmen and the bowlers to be as good as they can, so why shouldn't the umpires, and why shouldn't they be punished if they make a mistake? You know, I'm not on a witch hunt against these people, but it's not good enough, and I hope we don't see too many more shockers.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely important for the game. We've got another inspection at 11:30 at Trent Bridge, guys. India playing New Zealand. More rain. It's never a good sign at a World Cup. We want to see more cricket. We want to see these big players on the show. Warner, the likes of Kohli, and of course Kane Williamson for New Zealand. Such a big game. We've got all that and more coming up in this World Cup. We'll see you tomorrow, bright and early at 10 o'clock.